Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour today. My name is Amy Wheeler and I'm your host. And today we have a lovely yoga therapist and psychotherapist with us named Jenna Schissel from Iowa. And Jenna has a story that I think so many of us yoga people, Ayurveda people can relate to. And it may actually be why so many of us found yoga as a healing tool. And the story starts off with I have social anxiety, or I have depression. I'm a little bit uncomfortable in my skin. I'm having trouble connecting. And, many of us found ways to cope with that that weren't always helpful, weren't always healthy. And so Jenna tells her story around that and how it all unfolded. And then so many of us have had this similar experience that we found yoga. And suddenly, for the first time in our lives, we felt good. We felt okay. We felt a sense of relief that we really hadn't felt before, maybe temporarily with all the coping mechanisms that we tried to use. But this kind of natural, an hour of yoga class, and now I feel okay. I feel like myself. I don't feel as socially anxious. I feel like I can handle what's coming at me, and I know who I am, and I like who I am. That is what yoga did for so many of us who are highly sensitive or introverted, whatever you want to call it, those people who have neurodivergence. And I think that's why there's so many of us in the yoga world. Is because when we found yoga, we were like, ah, this is what I've been waiting for. So Jenna has a beautiful story to share with us. And towards the end, I just want to give a little warning if anyone's listening with their children in the car or for any reason feels uncomfortable with something like this. But in addition to yoga therapy and separate from yoga therapy, Jenna is a licensed counselor and does kind of psychedelic type therapies with ketamine. She goes into that a little bit too. Although it's separate from yoga therapy, it really is interesting that there are some parallels to getting to know yourself, to understanding yourself, deep, deep self-reflection, and maybe even both take you to that place where you can be the observer or the witness of your own suffering. So I think there's some really interesting parallels, even though they're separate modalities. I really think it's kind of interesting how both have this ultimate goal of who am I? Why am I here? How can I suffer less? And how can I create a little bit of spaciousness around the difficult things that have happened to me in my life? So I hope you enjoy this episode with Jenna, and let's go meet her now. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. I'm Amy Wheeler, your host. Are you needing to earn some continuing education units? Well, we have the exact thing for you. Every single Monday night, we have a Monday night clinic where we practice postures, breathing, and meditation towards a very specific theme of the month. And then we stay afterwards and we talk about the theory of why we chose what we did for that particular practice. We give you a completion certificate, which you can turn into your continuing education body. And we're growing all the time. We have a wonderful community. You can do this live with us online, or you can do it through a recording. Go to www.theoptimalstate.com and check out the Monday Night Clinic, and we would love to see you there. Welcome, Jenna, to the Yoga Therapy Hour.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Jenna, where are you located right now? I always like to tell our listeners where we're coming from.
I'm living in Meskwaki territory. The colonized name is Des Moines, Iowa.
Thank you. And you and I have an Iowa connection because I grew up in Iowa and I went to school in Iowa, master's degree at University of Northern Iowa. So I feel like I have relatives in Des Moines. So it's good to be with you.
You too. Thank you.
So Jenna, season eight, I just decided I had somebody in season seven tell such an amazing story about their health and healing through yoga and Ayurveda. And it just inspired me to say, oh my gosh, I want a whole season full of stories and people just talking about real things that happened to them and how they overcame it. And I think especially in the climate that we have right now in the world, I think these stories of hope and healing are even more potent, that people need kind of like some hope that it's not always going to be this hard. So can you take us all the way back to a time in your life when maybe you were suffering, that maybe things weren't going so well? And by the way, to the listeners, I have no idea what Jenna's story is. I think it's kind of fun to like let it unfold together. So take us wherever you want to take us, Jenna, and set it up for us.
Yeah, amazing. Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for that context, because I was kind of nervous coming on as far as like, oh, I'm just some random person. Like, why is anyone going to want to hear my story? And I felt very intimidated because a lot of your guests are like PhDs and, you know, they're movers and shakers in the world. So anyways, I understand a bit better now. My story begins when I was a kid. Honestly, it is where it started. So I feel like I've always had trouble connecting with people. And I think maybe there's like a little bit of neurodiversity that plays into that. And I'm very introverted anyway. My social battery drains very quickly. And so, you know, when you're a kid, your parents, your family, or your whole world, you don't really notice it then. And then like small kids, we all just play together when we're kids, right? But then I think even in kindergarten, I started to notice like, oh, I feel like I don't fit in, or like, oh, I feel like it's hard to connect with people. And like, maybe I didn't have the words for it at that time, but I think it kind of created this reinforcement cycle of, okay, well, now I feel like I'm not connecting. So it's harder for me to put myself out there. And when I'm not putting myself out there so much, then I'm not getting as much practice. And so I would just felt like I was getting more and more isolated. But I think that that's where I'm like, I'm starting to notice that. And so I'm starting to put myself out there and do things like podcast and like try to actively combat that cycle.
I appreciate this so much and I can relate. You know, when I was in, I don't know, fourth grade or something, the teachers were calling my parents because at recess, I would just sit against the brick wall. Even though I was very athletic, I just wouldn't interact with the kids. The teachers were worried. So were you getting any feedback? Were your parents getting any feedback that maybe you were introverted or isolating?
Yeah, I was the same way. I like didn't hang out with people at recess. And yeah, I think probably at parent-teacher conferences, they were like, Jenna's grades are fine. We're just worried about if she's having enough social connection.
Yeah. You're so right. As a little kid, you don't have words for that. You don't know if that's normal. It's just so weird. I mean, now I can imagine parents are so evolved. They might like say to their child, look, sweetheart, you're okay. There's introverts, there's extroverts, there's neurodiversity, you know. But back then, I don't know how old you are, but I'm almost 55. And like, that was not a thing. You just pulled yourself up and got out there and got it done. So were your parents at all involved in supporting you or helping you understand any of this?
Yeah, well, I think as you were kind of alluding to, we do have so much more information now. And I think my parents probably did the best they could with the information they had at the time. But yeah, it's not nearly to the extent of what's available these days.
Yeah, and they had no idea.
Right.
And what I learn as I talk to people that have gone through this type of thing, the whole family might have some introversion or highly sensitive people or neurodivergence. Like, so it doesn't occur to anybody that anything is different. This is just how we function. I always laughed because our family would all be in a room together reading books. Now I look back, I'm like, yeah, that's probably not a normal family.
Oh, I love that.
So take us to the next part of your journey. How did it unfold for you? Meaning like, did you go through high school, college? Like, what were the signature points of this journey?
I went to college for like a couple of semesters and then I was skipping classes too much. And I was telling myself like, oh, it's too cold. I don't want to go out in the cold. But I think I just had too much freedom, not enough structure. You know, it's the first time living on your own. And so then my dad had suggested, why don't you join the military? And at first I was like, no. And then I also had a friend who was joining at the same time. And she was telling me all of the cool things that her recruiter was telling her. So...
And how old were you at this point?
19.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I joined the military for 6 years and I probably started in dealing with my suffering. I probably started drinking at a relatively young age, experimenting with alcohol when I was 16. And then, of course, that only continued into college. Then it's very normalized. And in the military, it's very much part of the military culture. And so it just got more and more. That was another reinforcement cycle, right? Oh, I'm surrounded by it and it's normal. And I recognize that I can connect better with people and I don't feel as anxious and I don't feel as weird and nervous when I'm using alcohol as like a self-medicating social lubricant type of thing. So then I started, like, I didn't think that I was suffering, but clearly there was something happening that it wasn't just a moderate amount of alcohol. It was too much.
And I think what you just said is so true for so many people. I didn't think I was suffering. When our culture normalizes all the things, over shopping, drinking, drugs, alcohol, porn, wine, food, like it's just what we do to cope. And so we don't even realize, I think, that there is such a thing as social anxiety and that there are other tools that we can use to cope. I don't know, like you said, I didn't even realize I was suffering. You were just kind of like just going through your day and have a drink when at night.
And that was the thing. There was always a reason. It was like Taco Tuesday. Well, okay, I have to have a margarita. And then Wednesday, and then it's Thirsty Thursday, and then it's the weekend. So, like, of course, you're drinking on the weekend, So normalized.
Yeah. I laugh because we live a mile from Wisconsin, and Wisconsin is like the drinking capital of the United States or something. And it is so normalized. I go over there, and at lunchtime, everybody's just putting them down. So continue on. So then what happened? How did you move towards some kind of self-awareness about all of this?
So I had been practicing asana or physical yoga postures on and off since high school. I wasn't very regular or committed. And I mean, I do remember that there were a couple of shavasanas that stick out as it was like an exhale that I didn't know that I was holding. And it's just like so spacious and just like calm. And I was like, oh yeah, this is why I do yoga. So then I became more and more regular with my practice. And then in 2020, actually at the height of COVID, I went to Joshua Tree and did my yoga teacher training, which at that point I'd been practicing on and off for like over a decade. And that was actually the first time I'd ever heard of the yamas and niyamas, believe it or not, which is crazy.
Wow. And for our listeners, the yamas are like the five social disciplines, how we interact with people, and the niyamas are the personal disciplines, how do we take care of ourselves? And those are supposed to be taught before all the asana or postures, right? So 10 years and nobody had ever mentioned those. That's
Yeah, I'd
amazing.
never heard of it before. I was like, what is svadhyaya? What are these strange words? But speaking of svadhyaya, self-study, at a certain point before that, I had stopped drinking because I was recognizing, like, I just don't feel good in my body when I'm doing this. And so in my mind, I was like, I'm just going to take like a month off, like, let my body reset. I don't know how this worked out in my brain, but I was like, yeah, I'll just let my body reset and then, I'll get back into it because, like I said, that was so normalized for me for so long and that was all my friends were doing. But then the longer I went without drinking, I was noticing the better I was feeling. And it was like very evident as far as like my skin was looking better. I wasn't breaking out as much. I remember I had gone to a dermatologist and was asking about, like, yeah, I'm starting to see some like redness around my nose. And she was very gentle. She was like, do you drink? And I was like, not really that much.
Taco Tuesday, Wet Wednesday, Thirsty Thursday, and the weekends. I don't drink on Monday.
But yeah, at some point previously to that, I had stopped drinking and then I went to yoga teacher training. And I always tell people that was like a profoundly life-changing experience for me. Just like the connections I made there, the connection I made with myself there, my relationship with myself. And I think that's part of how you help alleviate suffering is like have that relationship with yourself where you have the trust and the spaciousness to recognize that you can allow that pain and you can sit with it and you are vast enough to let that pain be heard. So after 2020, I've been very regular with my yoga practice. And obviously, I'm at the optimal state for learning how to be certified as a yoga therapist. And I've noticed that too, my practice has evolved. So where it was very like emphasis on asana, I have noticed that I've kind of started to get into like maybe I don't care so much about can I hold Pincha Mayurasana for 6 minutes? Can I compare myself to these Instagram yogis? Like, I want to explore the breath. I want to explore chanting. I got a chanting practice from Melanie Boyer. Shout out Mel, who's amazing. It's been so cool, like feeling the vibrations and feeling the subtleties of like how my energy shifts through that practice. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about yoga is that it meets you where you are. So like 10 years ago, 10 or 20 years ago or whatever, when I needed asana, great. And now as I'm like changing and evolving and growing, there's breath work and chanting. And then, you know, someday maybe I'll get to the subtleties of like maybe I want to focus more on meditation. Or maybe I'll decide I want to go back to asana. Whatever, wherever I am, yoga is there too.
My name is Amy Wheeler, and I am the host of the Yoga Therapy Hour. I oftentimes get asked, Amy, you've been doing this for 2.5 years now. How can we help support the Yoga Therapy Hour? And there's a few ways. Number one, you can become a Patreon member, and that is on Patreon. You can donate as little as $5 a month to the podcast. But another way that you could help us would be to join our Optimal State mobile app. That too, right now, is about $5 a month. It helps you track your gunas. It gives all sorts of lifestyle medicine suggestions based on yoga and Ayurveda. We have yoga nidras on there. We have Dharma talks on there. So you could actually benefit from getting the app and also help support this podcast at the same time. We hope you'll consider it. Go to the Apple iPhone store, and we hope that you'll download that app and start using it so that you can benefit, and so can we. I want to go back to Joshua Tree for a minute. I love all that you said, and there's so much to unpack, but I'm just imagining you showing up in Joshua Tree. And for anyone who has never been to Joshua Tree, it is magical. It is like a vortex of benevolent energy, and there is the desert and the sky at night with all the stars is so vast. I mean, it is magical. And to go and do a teacher training there and find yourself and meet yourself, like I just get almost chills thinking of that. So that's number one. And I'm also thinking about so many people that take like a 200-hour teacher training, not even to teach. I mean, they might teach, but how beautiful it is to take a 200-hour training. We give a teacher training certificate, but for a lot of people, it truly is kind of a self-discovery. Who am I? How does this fit with me? How can I get to know myself better? Like you said, Svadhyaya, the self-study. So I just want to have a shout out for that too, because I think so many people hear the word teacher training and they think, well, I don't want to be a yoga teacher. And I just want to invite anyone who's listening that you can take a 200-hour teacher training and not be a yoga teacher. And there's so much goodness there for us just to find self-discovery. So that's another thing that kind of came up for me. Other thing that I'm kind of in awe over, it seems to me you went from quitting drinking to really starting to get to know yourself and the vastness within your own heart and mind to now doing chanting and, you know, more meditative and breath work. Like it seems to me like you spanned that pretty quickly. It sounds like it was, what, 4 or 5 years or something?
Yeah, probably 5 years since I have been like really buckling down, I would say.
Yeah. And did you also get a mental health degree at some point during all of this?
Yeah, I guess that's part of it too, because that was like a 3-year program. So I got my master's in counseling, and that was a 3-year program that really, you know, a lot of the work within that is to look at yourself and do more self-study and figure out what your pain points are and what your trigger points are. And so I guess that kind of helped. It's so it's not that it was only yoga. And in Western society, we tend to think of yoga as only the postures, but yoga is this huge umbrella that obviously, as I was saying, envelops self-study and breath work and like all of these other subtleties that we don't necessarily think of immediately.
Yeah, so beautifully said. And I think it's interesting that you've taken a whole 3 years to be a mental health counselor, and yet you're discovering a whole different tool basket and all different things, which is another 2.5 plus years as a yoga therapist. There are some intersections, but I think a lot of people think that if they got a mental health degree, they could basically take a little bit of yoga and plug it in. And it sounds to me like you're discovering the vastness and depth of yoga therapy, a separate scope of practice and lens from your counseling. Not that you couldn't use both, but like there's so much information in each of those buckets.
Yeah, there is so much to yoga therapy. And like at first, it felt overwhelming. You know, as you were saying with the first year, it's kind of just a big info dump. And I'm like, how am I going to learn all of this? But yeah, it's very much like circular learning. And there's just so much there because as beings of light or what have you, there's so much depth and breadth to us. And so the tool basket has to be able to meet everything that we are.
Right. And our interests and our abilities and our biases. We laugh that some of the people that get assigned to teach chanting practice, like they hate chanting. They don't want to do chanting. But through getting ready to do that teaching experience to their colleagues, they fall in love with chanting. And I just think that's so funny that a lot of times we push away the things that will help us, that are good. And yet, at first, it almost feels like we're repelled from it. I find that fascinating. But I guess
Yeah.
you liked your chanting right away, didn't you?
I struggled with my chanting practice, but there was Mel Boyer was offering, I think it was just like one of the morning practices that we go through, and it was one of the Lakshmi chants. I forget now exactly what the wording was, but I just felt like immediately after that practice, I emailed Mel and I was like, you have to make me a chanting practice.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, as an adult, you're a grown woman now. You've got a master's degree in counseling, I believe, and well on your way to being a yoga therapist. Let's go back to that little girl who was introverted and maybe had some social anxiety. Do you feel like the tools that you have from yoga and yoga therapy, like, can you use those on a daily basis to self-regulate and to check in with yourself and be like, okay, let's have a little intervention here. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, definitely. I find myself breathing all the time, as far as like, oh, I'm feeling really irritable or aggravated right now, or like, oh, this is hurtful. I feel sad. Like, breath work. Like, every single time I'm like, okay, breathe, give myself some spaciousness, allow this to be here. You don't have to move it or change it. I mean, given the circumstances, like, obviously, if I'm like in traffic, like, I can't start bawling, you know, like, appropriately. But what I wanted to say too is that I think a lot of this is like I can put it into like my counseling lens, as far as like I can tell people we're regulating the nervous system, we're talking about heart rate variability, you know, all of these like more Western scientific terms that the rishis 5,000 years ago were talking about, but we're just using different language for it now.
Exactly. And are you able to teach your clients to check in and to learn how to find the breath and the spaciousness and non-reactivity? I mean, do you feel like people get it if you can put it in the right language for them?
I think it's a slow process. I think oftentimes when people come to therapy, that it's kind of like a last resort, right? Like, oh, I've tried everything and I'm still not feeling great and like something needs to happen. And so they want to feel better immediately. And I think one of the things I try to remind them is, okay, you've developed these tools and these coping mechanisms and you developed them however long ago, under certain circumstances, with the tools you had available to you at the time. And now your brain has literally those neural pathways, it's like a super highway, right? Like you have practiced it so many times that now your brain is just a go-to. So you're going to have to literally retrain your brain, make new connections, and it's going to take a lot of conscious effort because you are so well practiced at doing this other thing that now instead of the super highway, you have to take the gravel road. And so I tell people, like, it is probably going to be slow going. And if you are able to kind of commit to it and really put your conscious effort into it, like, you will start to see a difference.
So I have to ask you, I was talking to a gentleman the other day. He asked what I did, and I was telling him. So we weren't in a clinical session or anything. And I was explaining kind of what you just said. You said it much more eloquently than I said to him. But he came back and he's like, you know, all that you're talking about is so woo-woo. He said, show me the science behind this. I'm not buying into it. And I was like, oh, there's a ton of science behind this. So I sent him all these articles and all this science. And then he came back a little bit later and he said, okay, the science is out there, but does it really work? Like he really couldn't believe that it works, that you can actually take that gravel road enough times that that becomes your superhighway. Mm-hmm. And that the old superhighway will always be there. And mm-hmm. when you're under stress, you're likely to take that route. That you can literally recreate your neural pathways, the way your mind works, the way your nervous system works, a large percentage of the time. And do you have clients like that that don't really buy into it or believe it, even though we have all this science to support it?
Yeah, I've definitely come across some resistance sometimes as far as like, you want me to breathe, but in the heat of the moment, like that's something I hear a lot is like, well, but when I'm in the heat of the moment, like I can't even think. And I'm like, yeah, I hear you. First of all, increase your window of tolerance so that you are not getting to the heat of the moment so quickly, so often. And secondly, how can you support yourself in those moments to where maybe you have a chance to kind of cool down, recognize what was your trigger or what is your patterned reaction? And, you know, because once we have information about ourselves, then we can make a decision of, do I want to continue this pattern of behavior or do I want to change it? And it's not necessarily that either one is better or worse. It's just that now you have the information and you get to make a decision based on that.
Or create some support structures if we don't have the internal resources to be non-reactive and jump on the old superhighway, that maybe we put some external stop gaps to help us remember, like, okay, you're not in your thinking brain right now, your emotional brain. And so, like, for example, my husband and I have kind of a pact that when I have a really hard email to send or a conversation to have, he gets to check it first. Mm-hmm. And now I'm starting to replace him with some other tools that I use too, but it's super helpful to have some support. And that could be your therapist, like you give to people. It could be your best friend. It could be your grandma, to just, when you're not ready to go on that gravel road by yourself yet, that somebody can get in the car with you and drive down the gravel road and help assure you that this is the right path we want to be going on, not the superhighway. So I don't know if you want to get into this, Jenna. It's kind of another topic, but I think it's interesting and related, and it's so prevalent in today's times that it would be interesting to talk about. I had noticed on your new beautiful website that as part of your psychological services, so this is separate from yoga therapy, I want to say, but mm-hmm. as part of your counseling services, you offer ketamine, you can help me say it correctly, assisted therapy. Is that something you'd be willing to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I'm super excited about it. So ketamine, it has traditionally been used in hospital settings as kind of like a pain relief because it's a dissociative. So you're not like feeling your body as much, your physical body. But then they started noticing that people were having sort of longer term like cognitive shifts. And so now it is being introduced in the mental health field. You know, I've heard it described as like, so typically with dissociation, we think of, for example, PTSD, where you're so overwhelmed that your nervous system goes into a state of freeze and you're not in your body. But this is dissociation in that you can kind of climb the mountain and look down at the valley and sort of have a sense of spaciousness as far as like, oh, I can see that this is something that is triggering for me, or this was a painful event in my life. And how can I process that, like move through that through my thoughts and not have so much emotional attachment to it? So that's like while the medicine is in your system, right? And then also the way I do it is I do like a 6 to 8 week protocol. So it's lower doses, but they're cumulative to where it's increasing neuroplasticity, which, you know, will help, as we were talking about the gravel road, having neuroplasticity helps your brain have new neurons to connect and more pathways available. So then you're able to kind of change your I think there's a book by Michael Pollan called How to Change Your Mind about like psychedelics. And so you're able to like change your brain and your thinking patterns, and then it has like a long-term effect. So while the medicine is in your system, you're having this immediate effect, and then you're also having this cumulative long-term effect as well.
From your experience, what are they feeling during a session? Are they sleepy? Is there a clarity where kind of the witness or the observer arrives? What do people feel when they're receiving the medicine?
So it depends on the dose. So I like to have people lay down and wear a little eye mask, and we have some very calming music going, very soothing lighting, and they're able to just lay there and observe what's happening. And maybe they'll say, a few words here and there that I can jot down and we can dig into later. But for the most part, it's a very internal process that's happening.
And then when they come out, I don't know how many hours that is, but do they drive home or does somebody pick them up or how does that work? I'm just so curious.
Yeah, so the medicine itself lasts about an hour. Sessions are like 2.5 to 3 hours. We'll do sort of a grounding where we check in, see how your week's been, kind of like a more, what you would think of as like a more stereotypical psychotherapy session. And then the client will ingest the medicine. It's a little lozenge, it just dissolves under your tongue. And then, yeah, they'll be with the medicine for about an hour. And then afterwards, we check blood pressure. Typically, I'll ask that people have someone to drive them home, but the person who trained me on it was pointing out that she thinks that ketamine is always going to have a place in the mental health field, as far as we're also starting to see like psilocybin. But with ketamine, like I said, you can have like a 2.5 to 3 hour session, whereas with psilocybin, you're kind of locked in for like 6 to 8 hours, which is a huge commitment. So yeah, so it's very accessible.
All right, so I have to ask hard questions too.
Yeah.
Hope it's okay. So
Yeah.
I love this idea of getting to be the witness of our suffering and kind of looking down from the mountaintop at ourselves and the experiences of our lives and getting a little bit of spaciousness around all of that. And the neural pathways opening up so that we can have new perspectives on our trauma and our suffering. Is there a fear from anyone in the mental health field that we could do this too often or inappropriately to a point where we lose our mooring or our anchor in this physical body? And I've seen this with people who do a lot of psilocybin, like they kind of start to live in the more witness realm, and it's hard for them to be embodied and live in the world and be the warrior that we have to be to survive. So, is there any talk about that in your training, or do you have an opinion about that?
That's a good question. I do think so. Like I said, for myself and my process, like we're starting at very low doses, and myself and my prescriber work very closely with the client in order to make sure that the experience you're having is appropriate. Because, like I said, we are doing it once a week. And I think that that's another important piece, right? Is that I'm there with you and I'm facilitating the session, and we're integrating it both like immediately afterwards. And then, we'll have some non-medicine sessions where we're doing integrative work. And I have seen this medicine administered in clinics where it's more of an IV and maybe it's not as supportive of an environment. It's a very high dose. It just immediately, just right off the bat. And I haven't experienced it personally, but the things that I've heard are that it's kind of like they leave you in a room with a button. So like if anything goes wrong, you can push the button. But at such high doses, like you can't feel your body. You don't know where your thumb is or where this button is. So I think that there are more and less safe ways to go about interacting with the medicine.
And I love what you said that you have sessions at the end to integrate. That's really what I want to get to is we don't just want to be the observer and not be embodied, not be in this human experience, which will always involve suffering. I mean, it doesn't matter if we get enlightened, it doesn't matter if we have different experiences in life, we're going to have suffering. And that integration of, oh, I am the observer and I am this human being in this body mind that has to find a way to make a living and has to break up with partners and has to have hard times with friends and family. You know, like that integration seems so important. Do you have any other thoughts about that integration piece?
Yeah, just that I'm trying to utilize all of my tools, psychotherapy, ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, and yoga therapy. So I think that I could maybe, after a ketamine session, the next time we meet, maybe we can do some yoga therapy to kind of work through some of the energy that came up, and psychotherapy to address some of the thoughts. And it's really like a whole person shift, and the shift has to be met with a whole person support.
Yeah, and ongoing support, hopefully. I love what you also said about the dosage, the frequency. It all goes into it's not just, oh, it's ketamine. There's so much to it. And I find it interesting, even though I don't think we would do yoga therapy with ketamine, like those two things probably wouldn't go together in the same session. I do think it's interesting that both have the potential to take us into this Purusha or observer of our human experience. I mean, to me, that's kind of fascinating. And even in the fourth chapter of the Yoga Sutra, it starts off in chapter 4, verse 1. It says, Oshadhi. It talks about the ways to work towards this liberation or freedom. And one of them, Oshadhi, means herbs. So even back in the times of the yogis, they were acknowledging, like, you can have these temporary states from herbs and get an experience of samadhi. And in the Yoga Sutra, in all fairness, it basically says those are going to be temporary. If you really want to have lasting experience, the path of yoga, the 8-limb path of yoga, is the way to kind of permanently cement it in yourself. So it wasn't telling everybody, oh, you can do herbs or you can do yoga. There was an affinity towards the yoga, but the fact that they even went to the trouble to say, look, here's all the ways you can do it. And one of them is through herbal therapy. It's kind of interesting, I think.
I think that it kind of opens the door. It shows you what you're capable of, and then we use the yoga and the other tools to kind of, sustain it.
So, where are you in your personal story today, Jenna? Do you feel like you're able to self-regulate and kind of manage and be the observer when you need to and come back into this embodied state? Do you feel like that little girl has found her healing, even not that every day is perfect, but do you feel like all these tools that you have learned and been working with, do you feel like she is where she needs to be now?
Yeah, I think I'm on a good path. I mean, ideally, I'm always growing and changing and learning more and more about myself, and patterns arise that I wasn't aware of previously. And so it's a never-ending journey. And, God willing, I'm on it for another like 60 years. So there's still plenty of work to be done. And like I said, I think I'm on a good path.
Yeah, I mean, I think you were in some of our class on Monday night. We had a theme on our Monday night class of like you can be on this journey of yoga for 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years, and it just deepens. And we had some people on there that have been practicing yoga for like 68 years and 64 years and 50 years. I mean, it's so inspiring to think that through this practice, we will continue to go wider, deeper inside of ourselves, but also then coming out to meet the world and sharing with others. I mean, do you find that exciting that you could have 60 more years? I mean, I think that's amazing.
Yeah, like I said, as long as I'm in good health, but I have, all the matriarchs in my line lived forever. So I think I have a good chance.
So, do you have any last words of wisdom or anything that you'd like to share with us, especially if you have any workshops coming up or your website, anything like that?
I think one of the biggest things I want to leave people with is that healing, kind of like I was saying, it's not necessarily about fixing anything as much as it's just about reconnecting with yourself and giving yourself the space. And the science, there's a lot of science, like more tangible, I don't know, information that backs a lot of what we've been saying here today. And if you feel like you're struggling to find connection, you're not alone. I don't know if we've all been there, but certainly I've been there, and there is hope and there's change. And I've found peers, and I've immersed myself in the worlds of things that I'm really passionate about, and I have found people who do support my goals and my energy. And so it's not that there's anything wrong with you, it's just that maybe you still have to find your tribe, and that's okay. Currently, I'm offering a yoga therapy group for grief. It's called yoga for grief and emotional renewal. I think that that's especially relevant with the change in season. I think that there's, spring's right around the corner, and there's so much like renewal and rebirth associated with spring. So I think that this is a really good time to support maybe some grief work. And if any of that sounds interesting for you, or you're interested in any of the other things that we talked about, like ketamine-assisted psychotherapy or just regular psychotherapy, talk therapy, you can find me on my website at jennashizzletherapist.com.
And do you do psychotherapy sessions online? And do you have to stay within the state of Iowa? I know there's something with psychotherapists that it's state by state. So would someone need to be in Iowa to see you online or in person?
Yeah, I do psychotherapy both in person and online, but due to licensing restrictions, I can only practice in the state of Iowa. But anywhere in Iowa, as long as you have an internet connection, we can work together.
And yoga therapy. You could offer basically anywhere. There's no
Yes.
rules or regulations around doing that online.
Correct. Yeah.
So your website, www, I'm have it up on the screen now for those of you watching on YouTube. Jenna, JENNA, Schissel, SCHISSEL, therapist, THERA. PIST.com, and we'll put this in the show notes. And just a beautiful website. I have to
Thank you.
say, I just love it. I love the colors. I love the vibe.
Thank you.
It's really lovely. Well, thank you for being with us, Jenna. It has
Thank you
been
so much for having
fascinating.
me.
I learned a lot about you today, things I didn't know. And
Yeah.
thanks for being here and sharing your story.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenna, for being with us today and helping us highly sensitive people understand the magic of yoga and yoga therapy and how it has helped so many of us to gain a different perspective on our own suffering. And that a lot of times the external parts of our lives, our relationships, our jobs, our situations don't change, but something deep inside of us changes. And that it's that deep internal perceptual shift that helps us to suffer less as we remember we are the light. We are something that is eternal and all-knowing, something that is free of fear. That is our true self. That is who we are. And so many times the hard, hard things that happen to us in our lives, all the way from conception in the womb, early childhood, junior high, high school, becoming an adult, those things overpower that remembrance of who we are, and that yoga and yoga therapy can help us to remember that. And that's the thing that happens to us on the yoga mat in one of those first classes when we're like, wow, I feel different. I feel good. What is this? What just happened to me? And, we know through neuroscience what happens. Our perception changes, our nervous system functioning changes. We create new patterns and new habits of thoughts and emotions and behaviors. We understand now what's happening in the nervous system, in the neural pathways, and the mind, which is also amazing that we're at that place in history where we can actually take the teachings from these ancient sages that are 5,000 years old. And now we have medical research to support what is actually happening in our systems. It's just an amazing time to be alive, especially in the field of yoga, yoga therapy, meditation, Ayurveda. And I want to add that with all the suffering that's happening in the world and so many people really feeling that internal sense of chaos and loss of control and fear, now is the time to practice our yoga. If you've heard of yoga, if you have a videotape, if you can get on YouTube, any way you can get yourself to practice some postures, some breath work, some meditation, some chanting, some social disciplines, some personal disciplines, which we call the yamas and the niyamas. If you can start your journey of yoga, I really think you will feel better. And if there's a way you can get a guide or a teacher to help you on this journey, I highly recommend that too, because we are social beings. That social connection, that co-regulation is built into yoga. The very first limb of yoga talks about how are we in relationship to other people. So we know right off the bat, it is about this ability to connect with one another. So I leave you with that. Go find some yoga, practice yoga, become part of a community that can support you, and see if it can help you feel a whole lot better more of the time.
Thank you to our guests today. And if you've ever thought about being on the podcast, we would love for you to come and tell your story. This podcast is not just for the famous people or the people who've written a book. This podcast is for everyday people like me and you to tell our stories of health and healing and beyond, as yoga, yoga therapy, and Ayurveda has helped us. So please feel free to contact me if you have a story you'd like to tell on the podcast about your journey. There would be nothing more pleasant and pleasurable than getting to interview you and have you on the podcast. Don't be shy. You can do it. We're waiting for you to call. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.